on March the 9th in Sydney, there's a public forum that has speaking Alistair Crook, Craig Mockheber, who's UN official that resigned at the beginning of our Al-Aqsa flood over the treatment of the Palestinians, and Professor Joe Camilleri, Con Pavlakis, and four, Binoy Campmark, Emma Shah, all people who evaluate geopolitics and media relationships to and use Julian circumstances as an emblematic of a collapse into barbarity. I see that as an administrative means of the United States advanced by Admiral Sabrowski about 30 years ago, that you reduce to incompetence the state institutions of any nation that you possibly can. In the case of the Great Britain or the United Kingdom, it's clear that the administrative capacity has of a sovereign nation has all but disappeared. This means that you rule by chaos, which the United States is enacting wherever it goes. My name is John Shipton. I'm Julian Assange's father. We've been on the road for about 10 years now, advocating for Julian's freedom and pointing out that Julian is emblematic of a decline into barbarity of the institutions of state and those that administer them. On Julian, when he was young, he has a tremendous capacity, and he has the capacity for details and the curiosity to accumulate knowledge, and he can hold the very fine detail in an orderly fashion. So he was able to produce the website WikiLeaks and have it in an orderly fashion, holding millions and millions and millions of pages of information, making it accessible to whoever had the curiosity or to whomever wanted to understand their geopolitical position and the their government's geopolitical position in the world.
Yeah, I wonder if you could just maybe give us, even though it's a little bit personal, a bit of an anecdote, give us an idea of when he was a young man, how you recognised that Julian might be heading for this in this sort of direction.
Julian at that stage lived with his mum, but and so I don't readily have to hand those sort of anecdotes. He did have the nickname Wizard because of his capacity to put together things in an original fashion. He was also quite precocious and covered a lot of areas of learning with voracious intent to accumulate a profound knowledge of the subjects that he was interested in: mathematics, physics, and institutions and their organization and the human body.
I mean, was he a sort of, in a way, a kind of social engineer looking at the way society operated, fascinated by it?
Well, I'd prefer the term social scientist rather than a social engineer. You know, that most of what one is faced with these days are institutions which wish to engineer society to mirror their own internal ideology. So one becomes a bit of a critic, really, really we don't get very much opportunity as participants in our communities to place our ideas into institutions. They're quite resistant. That Lebachowski, the Polish researcher before the Second World War, pointed out that institutions mirror each other. They mirror their competitors. A really obvious example is the CIA and the KGB. But that is not limited to that, you know. All the institutions compete with each other, and also they're unreformable. The only thing that can happen is for the time to move on and other institutions or community efforts or ideologies grow up, and they often supplant those that are in the past. So they cannot reform themselves. They can only decline.
I mean, it might seem like a crazy question, but, you know, why is Julian in this super high security prison? I mean, the guy's a journalist. Surely he's not dangerous, although, you know, some rich and powerful people might think his ideas are dangerous. But I cannot quite understand why there needs to be so much security there.
Malice. Just a deluge of malice over 15 years. Julian is held incommunicado. That is a medieval removal of a person from society because the society thinks that somehow or other their voice will cause a plague of ideas, and those ideas will rise up and rob 10 Downing Street of its capacity to rule the United Kingdom. It's all absurd. It makes no sense whatsoever, has no rationale, no reasoning. It only has the psychopathology of malice behind it.
So I suppose the question is why? I mean, yes, he's been doing journalism. He's been reporting the truth. And it might seem a stupid question, but why are they doing this to him?
Well, two reasons. The one I've already given, that they fear that his voice will create waves in the administration of the United Kingdom. Two, well, I guess there's three reasons. Two is that his idea of holding documented information in a library accessible to all of the public who are interested or those who want to analyze what the government is doing or what corporations are doing. They don't like that. They fear that. They fear our participation in the governance of our society. They want to hold it to themselves. Most of the efforts of state in the last 30 years are to remove our capacity to influence the state because the state can think in the terms of a human psychology. We use that as a parallel in order to be informed. If it can think, then it holds to itself the means of administration, and it has the pride, hubris, and vanity that accompanies that position. It's really important understanding that the essence and genius of a society arises from the people at large, from the mass of us. It doesn't precipitate down like rainfall from number 10. And this is the error that contemporary administrations make, that they think that they know, they have in their hands the Holy Grail, and they can distribute wisdom and order and the economic success. Well, they can't, and it's proved you know, in the United Kingdom, it's proved over and over again. Tony Blair seems to be the first madman to control the reins of power, and ever since then, it's the position of the United Kingdom in the world has continued to precipitously decline. Now the United Kingdom is a second world power economically, and a third world power as far as its army is concerned. It can't put it has two aircraft carriers, and it can't put one to sea with one carrier to one destroyer to escort it for fear it will break down. And what aeroplanes are they going to keep on the? I mean, they've disassembled their aircraft industry, which was an excellent aircraft industry after the war. It still has the great treasure of Rolls-Royce, which is one of the foremost engine-making companies in the world. But as for the rest of it, they've let it go in this fanciful belief that you can use finance to generate protection for yourself. Well, it's turned out to be wrong. In fact, viewed from the outside, in Australia, the United Kingdom has declined into being a manufacturer of black arts, and MI6, GCHQ, and all of the other security agencies gathered together with the Five Eyes.
Can you tell us about the current stage of the court case? Because I know next Monday and Tuesday, the 20th and 21st of February, there's an appeal for people to get down to London to the Royal Courts of Justice and to support Julian. So what stage is the attempt to extradite him to the United States, which, of course, he was 100% right. He said this was what they were trying to do, even when he was under house arrest and accused of rape, which was by the press, although there was never any charges about that. So what stage are we at now, John?
Well, Julian has made an appeal to the High Court of the United Kingdom for an appeal hearing. He's asked for a hearing. The hearing on the 20th and the 21st will be before two judges who will decide in their leisure whether Julian can have a hearing whether he can have an appeal hearing and under what circumstances that appeal hearing may be heard if they give permission.
You mean they may not? And what happens then if they don't?
The appeal will go before the European Court of Human Rights.
I just wonder, I mean, you know, this is taking such a long time. Must have taken a terrible toll on Julian. Is it possible that the European Human Rights Court of Human Rights might find in his favour? Obviously, there is quite a lot of enmity between Westminster and Brussels.
Well, in the institutions of state hating each other, but they seem to hate Julian more than they hate each other.
Why is that?
If you take the act that was introduced into the United Kingdom, a legislation recently proposed as the digital safety, the urge to censor has grown over the period of Julian's persecution of the last 15 years has grown now to be something that the state urgently wants to institute. The destruction of the ideas of Julian Assange and the malicious incarceration in one form or another over 15 years and the 28 court cases have demonstrated to anybody in your position that's doing research journalism that the state will, if you find something that the state doesn't like, the state will pursue you with all the force that it can command.
You know what, it sounds a bit medieval, this.
To me, you know, the United Kingdom, a place that I loved to go to in the 70s, has declined into a medievalism, you know, book-burning medievalism. And in parallel with that, it's interesting that London was one of the world's great financial centres, and writing trillions of dollars of contracts, which occasionally fall into dispute and need adjudication, and having a fair court, a fair law administration, enabled people, felt comfortable, and enabled people to sign contracts with some confidence that if it fell into disrepute, it would be fairly adjudicated. Well, that's gone. You can only now understand that if the political circumstances favour one side or another in a dispute before the law courts of the United Kingdom, if the political circumstances so favour, then the decisions will be made in that direction. This is so destructive to the reputation of the country that brought to us at Rummy Mead the means whereby a shield is placed between the state, in that case the sovereign, and the people. Magna Carta, that great gift of the English-speaking people to administration, fair administration by the sovereign to the people through the relationship of law, has gone. They've thrown away their gold, and they've, if you might like the expression, they've killed the goose that laid the golden egg, and that golden egg was Magna Carta. Now the state uses law as an attack weapon against the populace.
Well, there's a bit of a dispute about who's really behind this. Is it a bit flippant to ask you, John, who you think is the most culpable, the British state or the US state?
Well, you know, after the war, they had the Nuremberg trials. One of the aspects, I think it's number 4 article, is that if you do something wrong, you have done it yourself. And that is the case with the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has, its Crown Prosecuting Service has conspired with the Swedish prosecuting authority to keep Julian in the embassy for 7.5 years, constantly refusing, even though they had 44 others at the time, constantly refusing to facilitate video interview or to facilitate one of the prosecutors from Sweden coming in to interview Julian in the embassy. They facilitated, they made actions, and the documentary proof is there for the public to inspect, that they conspired together to keep Julian in the embassy until the United States and Great Britain had put together a means whereby they could persecute Julian. It was revealed in the Yahoo documents, the 6,000 word article based upon the testimony of 9 serving and 21 retired CIA officers, that they were going to murder Julian. But the difficulty was, or kidnap, Julian. The difficulty was, if they kidnapped him, the Department of Justice in the United States said, well, what will we do with him if you kidnap him? We haven't got any charges. And so they prepared the charges. And finally, Sir Ian Duncan and Richard Grenell, which is the United States ambassador to Germany at the time, and Ian Duncan, who was some sort of undersecretary in the Foreign and Colonial Office, bribed or cajoled the president of Ecuador into removing Julian's citizenship, without process, by the way, without due process, and removing Julian's asylum, again without due process. I'd make the point here that if you are given asylum, then you are done. It's the process of giving that asylum is a procedure, and it's examined. The Organization of American States, from memory, there's 32, voted 30-2 that the Ecuador under Rafael Correa had done the right thing and followed the procedures required to extend asylum to Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. Ian Duncan, Richard Grenell, and Mike Pompeo don't bother themselves with the niceties of treaties and laws that have grown up to make correspondence between states and their people, their citizens. They don't bother with that. They just use condone power, what they can get away with.
Well, it's Tuesday the 20th and Wednesday the 21st of February. People are being asked to come to the Royal Courts of Justice at 8:30 a.m. in the Strand in London. Nearest tube is Holborn and Temple, nearest tube stations. This process has been flawed. You were just talking about process there, hasn't it? Because I know for a fact that some of the judges that have been making decisions about Julian's fate, often without a jury, have been in the situation where they have connections to the what you might call the deep state, the military-industrial complex. There's also been criminal spying on Julian going on and on his lawyers. So quite clearly, that this process has not been a good one. I wonder if, you know, you could say something about the way that the whole process, particularly putting judges in charge, you have a vested interest of some sort or other, has taken place through these cases and hearings.
I think that's a question you guys best answer, because I want the judges to act fairly. So, it would be invidious of me to drop a bucket of murd on the English judiciary and then hope that they will act decently in the Assange hearing 20 and 21. So I best leave criticism of the judiciary to yourself to evaluate. You probably, where you will know a lot more about it than me.
I know Stella's wife has been saying, excuse me, saying this week that Julian will die, in quotes, will die if the UK appeal fails and is sent to the United States.
Well, you know, it's not something that, forgive me, Tony, it's not something that I want to contemplate. I can quote to you the rapporteur on torture, Professor Nils Melzer's statement made publicly, and it went like this. We are watching before our eyes a slow motion murder. And if you don't mind, I'll leave it at that. It's not a subject that I want to think about.
I know you've got a poem there, haven't you? Would you like to share that with us?
This is William Blake. Oh, Rose, thou art sick. The invisible worm, it flies in the night, has found out your bloody bed and will your life destroy. It's a poem about the passing of time.
John Shipton, father of Julian Assange, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much.